Welcome to Career Tools. This week, you got the job, now what? Part one. The questions this cast answers are, what preparations should you be making after you get a new job? What can you do to start a new job well? And what research should you be doing ahead of a new job? If you're listening to this guidance wishing you were the one who got the job, you need the Interviewing Series, a series of podcasts that covers the entire process of interviewing from preparation to follow-up. There's 60 plus podcasts, 20 plus videos, and a written library, everything you need in incredible detail. What to do, how to do it, what to say, how to say it, what to write, and how to write it. We get emails every week telling us, you'll never believe it, it works. If you want to get on the other side of the got the job equation, buy the Interview Series. It feels like the moment you have an offer and you've accepted it is like, I've run this marathon to get a new job. I've got the offer. I've signed it or sent back and said yes. And they've given me a start date and I'm done. It's like running a marathon. I can collapse in a corner and someone will give me a banana or whatever and put one of those Mylar sheets around me. And
yes, exactly. Yeah, we're tinfoil.
We're done. And the amount of guidance there is for hiring managers about what to do when you get to that point would imply that that's true. Like, as the person who's been hired, you don't have anything to do and the hiring manager has a whole bunch of work to do.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's not true. This period between knowing the start date and actually starting, there's a whole lot of things you can do that makes the start date and that period, those 30, 60, 90 days, a lot easier and a lot smoother if you do them in that period in between. So take a few days, take a couple of days to, you know, recover, carb load, have some pasta after your marathon. Mm-hmm. And then we've got some suggestions for you.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So in our cast today, we're going to cover those, I'm going to say those crucial, often overlooked bits of being onboarded by a new company. Because this is I'm going to say, given the lack of guidance that exists for you, someone that knows you could be doing things, this is a real opportunity for you to capitalize on that moment now, right? Because there are things you can be doing, and we're going to give you some guidance on what to do, starting with don't stop and don't wait, followed by start relationships now where you can, then find the information you need now, and finally prepare your home and family life for your new position.
So don't stop and don't wait is we just said you could have a weekend's rest, which is true. A lot of people are resigning from their old job. They're thinking about handovers and they think, oh, I'm busy enough. I don't need something else on top of this. But look, this is the rest of the next couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people drop the ball now thinking, I have got enough to do. I've got to hand over my old job. I've got to handle my stuff in. I've got to prepare my family for a change. I've got to go to all of those parties that are going to be thrown for me, you know? And so they drop everything. And then 90 days into their new job, they're thinking, why is this so hard? Why am I not getting where I thought I was going to be by now?
Why do I still not have access to that system that I just discovered I don't have access to and should have had on day one? There's all those things.
Yeah, exactly. And part of the reason is because you did nothing in this period.
Yeah.
And sometimes people assume that the hiring manager is doing all of the work in that period. And a lot of the time, the hiring manager is not doing anything.
Yes, exactly.
Recruiters or recruiting managers, if it was a separate person, have moved right on to the next vacancy they have to fill. As a previous recruiter, I can tell you, that one's done. You got a start date? Good, I'm on to the next one because I got 200 roles to fill.
That's the thing.
The hiring manager is like, I've got a seat. I've got a person in it. I've got more problems than that. I've got 99 problems and that isn't one. I'm going to the next one. So a lot of the times, they, like you, have done the same thing. It's like, okay.
Finally.
Yeah,
finally. Finally. That door is closed.
Yeah, that's done. I'm going to do something else. So literally nobody is doing that work during that period. And that's why in 90 days, you're all having a hard time and nobody's getting anywhere.
Exactly. We can't assume, as much as we want to, that all of the hiring managers who will ever hire you know about manager tools and are following the onboarding checklist and have all of these things that they're doing to ensure you're brought up to speed quickly and as effectively as is possible. We can't make the assumption. So this period, the period that we call onboarding, is that period between the offer and roughly the 90 days in, when the new hire no longer needs that kind of intensive support they needed at the beginning. Now, there's an obvious divider in the onboarding period, though it's the start date itself, right? That's the date in between. And there's the period between the offer and the start date when you're not in the building, you're not connected to the network, you're not connected with the team, you're not doing any work, and the period after the start date where you in turn are connected in a way.
The fact that you're not in the building and not connected to the network and not with the team is what leads new hires to think there's nothing they can do in that period. Yeah. And so they don't do anything because they think there's nothing I could do from outside the company and I don't have the contacts and I don't have any access and I don't have any knowledge. So I can't give myself a head start. So I'll just concentrate on the things that I can do something about, which is leaving this company well.
Yeah, exactly. Leaving the company well or recharging my battery between positions, whatever that thing may be. And yes, so we busy ourselves winding up old jobs. And we, as those individuals who are coming into a new role, find ourselves in a position where we only respond to the necessary responses we need to provide to HR or the new boss in terms of the onboarding paperwork, salary things, etc. And we generally tend to do that only if reached out to. And in other words, we fall into this passive kind of fallow period, right? We respond to only the things we're asked to respond to. And as candidates, usually console ourselves with the idea that we need this rest before we hit the ground running with this new job.
That's what we tell ourselves.
Yeah.
But this is like Schrödinger's cat. And the only thing I understand about physics is until you look in the box, you don't know whether the cat's alive or dead, right? And you don't know whether you could develop any relationships or do any activities to make your lives easier later because you haven't looked in the box.
You're not looking in there. Right?
You don't know because you haven't asked.
You're not looking for it.
Right? And if you look, it might be true that there isn't anything you can do, but it might be true that there is things you can do. So we're going to talk about those things that might be in the box.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And again, this falling into a passive pattern is what most people do most of the time.
Right.
So not being an individual that falls into that passive pattern can set you apart from other people being onboarded. So that's where we kind of want to capitalize.
Yeah. So you all are already, you know, before you've even started, you're already sending a message about your work ethic, your
excitement for the position,
excitement, yeah, the way you work, the way you're proactive, all of those things that you, those messages that you want to send.
Yes.
And you haven't even started yet.
Exactly. So we're going to start with beginning those new relationships now where possible. That is, every touch point you have with someone at this new company is the beginning of a relationship. And we say this in every podcast, I think, for career tools. I could be wrong. We might have not said it in a single podcast, but I mean, one basically is zero, which means successful careers are built on results and relationships. And you don't yet have the opportunity to create or to add to results. You really don't. You don't even work there yet. But you do have the ability to start building some of those relationships. You probably have, from the interview process, the vaguest idea of what results you're responsible for and how you might achieve them. You can work through your relationships because you likely can start building those today.
So instead of assuming that any contact you have with anyone who works for or with the company is just a fleeting one or a transactional thing or just a once-only contact, assume that it's the beginning of an important relationship. You can't know who the real power brokers are in the organization.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know.
No, you can only know.
You just know names and email addresses at this point.
Yeah, you only know that experience tells us that the power brokers are rarely the people at the top of the organization charts. And the right people to have relationships with could well be the people that you happen to speak with during your onboarding and the people that are helping you with your paperwork or your new technology or your badge to get in the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how often someone senior in a team ends up helping you with your technology. Oh,
right.
Because so-and-so's been here forever. They've filled out the technology form for every person who's started for the last 10 years. It'll take them 5 minutes. It'll take the new guy 25 minutes. Let's just have that person start. And you think, oh, it must be the guy who's only been there a year who's filled in my form. So when he spells my name wrong, I'll be snarky about it. And you don't realize that actually it's the most senior person on the team that is filling your form in. Often it does get delegated to someone who is much more senior than you think.
I would say, Wendy, in the case where you're being brought on to a new organization, it's obviously because there was work there that was not being done by any other person.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also assume that these, what you might think of as menial type jobs, could be ones that are being completed by people at a higher position in the organizational chart.
Absolutely.
Because that's why we're hiring you. There are no hands. We need more hands. So you can't make assumptions about what someone's role is and that the import of that role, given they're needing more people to do work. Anyone could be doing it.
Yeah. And often also I've learned that the people who don't put their job title on their email are the people with the really big jobs.
I never noticed that, but I can see that being true. I can absolutely see that being true.
Yeah. So if they have less contact information, don't take that to mean that they are less contactable. Yeah, they're the kind of person who doesn't have a phone on their desk or doesn't have a computer.
Right?
That's not always true. So don't blow off these opportunities thinking that this person is not someone who's worth having a relationship with. Often the people who have control over the rooms and security and your badges and all the secretaries or the person who can get you a conference room when there aren't any available
exactly.
in theory are the people you want to know anyway. Often
yes.
the person who's setting up stuff for you isn't as junior as you think they might be.
Yeah.
And it's just good practice to have good relationships with everybody. So even if you're pressed for time, because it's pretty crunched right now, you're finishing the old job, you're starting this new one, just have a breath and at least be personable and polite.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if we haven't convinced you by now, everyone knows you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. I mean, how many times have we experienced that, right? Where we met somebody for the first time and they just rubbed us the wrong way. And then every other interaction was not nearly as smooth as it could have been or should have been for no good reason, frankly, other than that first interaction wasn't very good. And people will remember their first interactions with you. Their lasting impression of your personality, your effectiveness is going to come from those first interactions. I mean, we talk all the time about DISC, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is communication styles and how people's communication styles play into our assumptions about those individuals. If they draw the assumption from your first very curt, let's say, response to an email that you're kind of a jerk, they are going to assume when you start working there, you're probably kind of a jerk. Therefore, how are they going to treat you? Like, you're probably kind of a jerk. So, instead of that, again, be polite, be courteous, and ensure that you're treating these first communications with the service they require. Make them count.
I said I used to be a recruiter. I was in a lunch queue. And when you're recruiting and you're doing 8 interviews a day, you're in work mode when you're interviewing. But when you're at lunch, you're with your colleagues, you're in a different mode. You're at lunch with your team, and it's a different thing. And somebody walked up to me and said, "Hi, it was so good to meet you during my interview." And no idea who this person
was. Yeah, no idea.
You know, like 40 interviews a week.
Yeah, they don't know how many people you're seeing.
No idea. And she said, "It was so nice to meet you. You know, I had no idea whether or not you liked me or not." And I was like, "Oh, okay, well, that's the idea."
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to give it away. I'm just supposed to be nice. And she walked off. But that is the idea, right? I'm just supposed to be polite and personable. And I, at that moment, I was like, oh, well, that's a relief. At least that was the impression she got. But people remember you. That was her first impression of me, even though I wasn't trying to give her a first impression. I was doing it anyway. And she remembered me.
That's exactly it. Getting results and having great retention can be achieved with core behaviors that we teach in our effective manager training. But if you want a head start, it all starts with a great hire. The right hire may take a little bit of work to find, but it's worth it in the end. And everyone is needed to make a great hire. It's not just the responsibility of human resources or L&D or the hiring manager. It's a process, and many of us have input to it. Learn how your organization can improve its success with hiring. Contact us by sending an email to customerservice@manager-tools.com. For more information on our client effective hiring manager training, whether on-site or virtual. It's not just the responses to other people that are kind and polite and where you're given this opportunity to build early relationships. We'd also recommend you take an active role by staying in contact with your hiring manager. Because if you maintain this contact, this connection with that individual, they will receive the impression that you're very enthusiastic about beginning your new role. Now, ideally, we'd recommend that you aim to touch base with them every 3 days to either give regular updates or receive information and updates on the onboarding process. And again, reinforce your engagement with the organization. So while I think for some people, when they think staying in contact every 3 days might seem like a little bit too much, we've found what can help is rotating through communication methods. It'll just make it seem a little bit more natural, a little bit less overwhelming. And the active approach not only keeps you informed, but also shows how excited and committed you are to the new role. I mean, how many times have you been in this space between offer and starting a new job, and you're kind of sitting there like, I haven't heard from anybody in like a week. I kind of really just hope things are going well. I have no reason to believe they're not, but also, I just kind of hope they are.
Like, it's, do they remember space. They offered me a job?
Exactly.
Because they haven't talked to me. Well,
because they haven't talked to me.
The hiring managers feel the same. Like,
exactly.
Is that person actually going to arrive on that day?
Right. So you being that person to bridge the gap, if the hiring manager isn't, shows again how excited you are to begin this new role. And this active approach keeps you informed and shows that excitement and commitment to the role.
So here's an example of how often you might communicate and what kind of communications you might send. So on day one, when you've got the offer and you've accepted it, send a handwritten thank you note. On day three, send an email letting her know that you've received the information from HR and you've returned it. Mm-hmm. Day six, leave a voicemail asking if there's any documents she can send that you could be reading now. Are there any websites, books, or magazines she recommends you look at? On day nine, she calls you, and while you're talking, you ask about short and long-term goals that you should be thinking about. On day 12, you send an email asking what kind of software the company and team uses so that you can take a quick course on anything with which you're unfamiliar.
Exactly. So it doesn't feel like too much at all. It just feels like regular standard comms that can be expected. And in a common scenario, we'd expect that you'd start on then day 14. So there's nothing too much about that amount of communication. Every piece of communication in this context has a purpose, and one that doesn't really even need a justification. If you're not starting for 30 days, you're probably more senior in terms of your role, and therefore there's probably even more paperwork that you need to track down and you need to fill out, and there's probably even more correspondence that's required on reading and research you could be doing and preparation stuff that you should be getting up to date with. So finding these, excuses, probably not the right word, but finding these excuses to communicate every 3 days really, truly isn't that hard.
No. And in an ideal world, you'd get the essentials for job success. So what your job is, what the deliverables are, when they're due, what the standards are, who the key people are both on and off your team, how reporting is handled, how communication is handled, and so on. And whether you can ask these straight out before you've started depends on the time the manager is willing to give you and the level of detail with which they're willing to go. Some hiring managers want you to have all of that ahead of time.
Yep.
Some will not. And, you know, if you're on an internal team move, that's quite likely you'll have all that.
Yeah.
And if you're moving into a top secret role and you're coming from outside the company, you're not going to get anything. So, there's a range between those two.
Exactly. And I mean, good general rule for all things all the time. Don't be weird about it.
Uh-huh.
If you're asking for things and you're getting nothing in return, don't keep pressing for those same things.
Yes.
Don't be weird about it. And no, the conversations that you're having don't need to be an inquisition to discover every possible thing you could possibly know. But at least having a list or knowing a list will help you listen for those important facts and or ask about them in a more natural way. So that when the moment happens, when it seems as though the door's open, you could ask one of those questions because you know, hey, one of the things that I meant to ask about was X. And you can just ask it in a more natural kind of way.
If there's an opportunity to speak to your new colleagues or to initiate correspondence, then take it. If they're local to you, you can easily ask if they have time for lunch or a coffee so that you can get to know more about them, the team, and their role.
Mm-hmm.
And your role. If you're remote from one another, then a phone call or a video conference will work, or even an IM if that's the way they prefer to communicate. At this stage, it's what they want to do rather than the best method of communication. So if somebody from the team, for example, sends you an email about setting up some regular meeting. Oh, by the way, we have a Tuesday staff meeting at 9 o'clock. Just wanted to let you know, because you're remote, like you have to be at your desk at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You say, oh, would you mind hopping on a Zoom call for 5 minutes and just giving me some preparation? Because that's the day I start and I'd really like to know how it goes. And that would give you a chance to talk to that person.
So folks, if you're wondering, what could I say? I mean, what questions do I even ask? How do I even have a conversation with this new staff member? And there's, let's say, no Tuesday morning meeting you can ask about. Really, truly, the best question to ask is, tell me about yourself. All you have to do is listen and ask questions about the things that they say about themselves that you find interesting, or make note of things that you might have in common. Now, to be clear, this is not your chance to one-up them. If they went to a really prestigious school, there's no need to mention that you went to Harvard. Instead, ask them, what made you choose that school? Or if you, let's say, for example, both worked at a company, or you both lived in the same town at some point in time, then say that. But then again, quickly switch back to, how did you find it there? Did you enjoy your role? I can't believe we didn't cross paths. And if you do this, that is, make small mentions and then ask questions throughout the entire conversation, you will hear later that everyone you met said you were such a great conversationalist and they really enjoyed meeting you.
And if they run out of things to say, which is really unlikely, you can have that list of job successes to fall back on that you can ask about.
That's exactly it. But all you are doing here is trying to connect with them, right? People tend to, I think to Wendy's point, enjoy talking about themselves. So give them a platform to do that. They will like you for it. Now, there is one more group of people to talk to in this period, if you can. That is anyone in your network who works at or with this team or company. Now, hopefully, if you followed some of our previous guidance, you'll have talked to these people before you even interviewed, and their input is actually part of why you decided to apply for or interview with this company. And in terms of those individuals, if you haven't talked to them previously, any information you can get from the horse's mouth, as it were, is worth 20 times any information you're going to be able to read on the organization's website. So talk to those people. Learn as much as you can from them.
And if you did talk to them before you were hired, there is no harm in talking to them after you're hired either. For a start, you need to say thank you to them because they were part of you being hired, even if you think that that person didn't give you something specific that led to you being hired, they were willing to talk to you, and all of the information you got in the aggregate led you to being hired. So yeah. You need to say thank you for that anyway. And you also need to close the loop. There's nothing worse. There's a lot of things worse. But one of the frustrating things for people that are asked for advice a lot is not knowing the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody asks you, you know, I'm going to interview at this company, I know you worked there for 20 years, what was your experience like? And then not knowing that you got hired, it's frustrating and unfair. And so at least go say thank you and close the loop. And the other reason you want to talk to them again, other than thanking them, is the questions you want to know once you've been hired are different to the ones, the answers you wanted before you were hired. So before you're hired, you're asking questions with the idea that I want to be hired. I need to know these things before I know whether or not I want to take an offer, or mm-hmm. I need to know that the offer has these components. Once you've been hired, you have a whole different set of concerns.
It's a different set of questions. Yeah. Exactly. Completely different.
So another conversation makes sense.
Right. And I mean, who doesn't want to start in a new organization where you've already got friends in different parts of the organization? Like, I've already got a contact over in this part of the org. That is such a great thing to have. But again, if you don't stay in contact with these people and you don't give them an update or thank them, whether or not they're your contact in another part of the org becomes less.
Doesn't
less
help.
Certain. Mm-hmm, exactly.
So we've given you two things. Don't stop. We did tell you you could have a weekend off. So
you're welcome, yeah. Everyone.
Yeah, you're welcome. And start relationships where you can. So we're going to stop for this week so you can have that rest and start relationships this week. And next week, we're going to give you two more activities to do in this period between the offer and your start date. We'll be back with part two next week. Bye, everyone.